local experts. Every Monday, we dig into the biggest stories in the NBA with the Locked On Podcast Network hosts. Today, we'll stop in New Orleans to speak with Jake Madison of Locked On Pelicans about Zion Williamson, his return from injury, and the struggles with the Pels at the moment. We go to Utah to speak with David Locke of Locked On Jazz about why Mike Conley is struggling and how Utah can get their fortunes turned around. And lastly, we go to New York to speak with Gavin Shaw of Locked On Knicks about David Fizdale's firing and the state of the New York Knicks franchise. It's all coming up, the biggest stories with the local experts. It's on Locked On NBA.
You are Locked On the NBA, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Hello and welcome back to another week of Locked On NBA. I am your Monday host, Josh Lloyd. I'm also the host of Locked On Fantasy Basketball, the lead analyst at BasketballMonster.com and at Yahoo Sports Australia. We're going to cover some big stories across the league in today's show, so stay tuned and let's get to it. I'm joined now by the host of the Locked On Pelicans podcast. Jake Madison is here with me. Jake, first of all, let's talk about the recent news about Zion Williamson and his knee injury. It does appear that he maybe is going to be outside that 6 to 8 week window that was presented initially. So what's the latest on the Zion knee problem?
Yeah, I think it's safe to say it's going to be outside that 6 to 8 week window. David Griffin on a recent broadcast pretty much said as much, but I don't think there's any real reason for concern with this. The Pelicans being as bad as they are this year, there's no reason to rush Zion Williamson back. In fact, they found the MCL tear to be very minor. This is something that was done precautionarily. They weren't as worried about the surgery, and they're just using the time that he's out to really kind of get him right. They put in metrics that they want him to hit before they get him back out on the court. Some of that's conditioning, some of it's going to be strength and core training. I think they're also using some of this time to maybe fix some of his biomechanics, as they put it, the way he runs, get him with proper form that way before they put him out on the court. But they're not concerned about the knee injury pretty much whatsoever. I don't think they're worried about any sort of risk of reoccurrence, but they don't want to put him out there until he's fully caught up, both physically and mentally. So what they're doing on offense, what they're doing on defense, or lack thereof, I guess. So no real reason to be concerned about Zion Williamson long term. He's the centerpiece of this franchise. They're just going to play it overly cautious with him, and I think we'll see him on the court sometime in early January.
Yeah, that's my expectation as well, to see him there in January. I think that, you know, the recent comments that have come out have allayed some fears that some people had that, oh, he was going to do a Ben Simmons and shut it down and not play at all and come back for Rookie of the Year next year. I don't see that happening unless there's a setback that does happen in the next few weeks. I think we are definitely seeing Zion on the court coming up in the new year. Just how much we see early on, he's going to be on a modified program, no back-to-backs early on, and low minutes, as you'd expect for a guy coming back from a knee injury. That's pretty standard procedure, but he will be here at some point this season. But this team, I don't think it's going to matter whether Zion comes back. They are not good at the moment. They are 6-17. They have lost 8 consecutive games. And the last one, Jake, wasn't great. A 46-point, ass-kicking against the Dallas Mavericks. What is going wrong with this team? Because they've had injury concerns. Obviously, we haven't had Derek Favors for a long period of time. Back spasms, the death of his mother. But he's not the entire reason. Everyone else is pretty much ready to go. But yeah, having no Favors and no Williamson there, presumed starting front court, is an issue. But what else is going wrong at the moment here?
Yeah, you know, there's a lot, and it's disappointing overall to kind of see where this Pelicans team is ended up right now versus where we thought they could be. And again, some of it is the injuries, but it's really the defense. The offense has been pretty good for the most part this season, though the past couple of games they've become maybe a little too reliant on the three-point shot. But they've got a lot of shooters on this team, and I'm probably for the first time ever believing in the Pelicans' three-point offense, with guys like J.J. Redick, Brandon Ingram shooting, I think, above 40% from deep. So they've become a little bit reliant on that, making them one-dimensional, at times very easy to defend. And if you have an off-shooting night, well, then you're going to go down, just like they did against the Dallas Mavericks, where I think they only made 3 threes out of however many that they took. But the problem is on the defensive side of the ball. They can't stop anyone. They've been bottom 5 on defense all season long. There is no rim protection with Derek Favors out right now. That is a big concern for this team. And when you have poor defense on the perimeter, Lonzo Ball not playing particularly well, it kind of just compounds everything. Guys can get to the rim and score against the Pelicans with relative ease. There doesn't seem to be any communication on that side of the ball. Look how many long rotations they put themselves in. They don't know where the help defense is coming from and just look very unorganized and with a lack of discipline on that side of the ball. That's leading to opponents getting open threes or open looks at the rim. You're not going to win very many ball games if that's the case. Getting Derek Favors would help with some of that rim protection, but he can only do so much as one man down low, and I don't think that's necessarily going to fix the problem. So until they start communicating on defense, understand what the system is, what they're trying to do, something they just do not understand at all, they're going to keep losing basketball games. It's kind of as simple as that.
We had at the early portion of the season that Gentry was playing 12, 13-man lineups and rotations. It hasn't really narrowed that down despite the injuries. We're still seeing in pretty much every healthy player play most games. The exception, Etuan Moore, has been a healthy scratch the last two games. How much of that is just an uncertainty with such a new squad and a lot of young players and trying to work out how it fits? Or do you think that's creating a problem if just your role sort of no rhythm being established with a lot of players?
I mean, I think it's a mix of everything. I think part of it is they're still going through a bit of an experimentation phase. You only had six holdovers from last year's roster going into this season. You just don't know what works and what doesn't. So the first quarter of the season, I expected them to be more or less experimenting with lineups and see what worked, ideally around Zion Weeps. So we don't know what fits around him best yet either. But now at this point, you might need to try and kind of dial that in a little bit just so you can start winning some games and maybe get a little bit momentum on your side. But part of that also comes with the chemistry side of things, too. These guys aren't used to playing together. They don't know whether they're going to be playing with the same teammates and the same lineups on any given night or if it's going to be dramatically different. And that makes it tough to kind of find any sort of, or to build any sort of chemistry and to find any sort of rhythm with one another. So the lack of a solidified rotation, different guys going into the doghouse, not getting minutes. Etuan Moore's played pretty well this year for the most part, and he's not getting minutes out there when maybe he should. But at this point in the season, maybe the Pelicans need to be going with a full-on youth movement and giving a ton of those minutes to guys like Nikhil Alexander-Walker. Jackson Hayes is getting those minutes almost because there's no other option. So it's kind of everything compounding on itself. The lack of rotations are hurting the defense, and then the defense has been so bad, Alvin Gentry wants to keep tinkering and keep trying different things till he finds one that works, but that also creates a bad defense too because these guys don't really know how to play with each other, and it's just something that's tough to kind of sort out during the regular season. I don't expect this defense to get significantly better even if you throw Zion Williamson in the mix.
The other thing, just quickly before I let you go here, Jake, is Brandon Ingram has had one of the breakout seasons in the NBA, one of the front runners for most improved player. He's got a huge usage. He's leading this team, really directing the offense, 28, 29% usage. How is that going to mesh when Zion returns? Because we saw Zion really getting a ton of usage in the preseason, dominating his efficiency. How is that going to fit? Because Ingram had some issues at the beginning of the season with, you know, over-dribbling and a lot of ISO-heavy stuff. How do you see that fit working? And will Ingram have to take a step back, or has he established himself now to be this number one guy?
Yeah, you know, that's a really interesting thing. He's also in a contract year where he's probably in line to get a max deal with how he's played already this year. Is that kind of mentality suited towards taking a step back when you're trying to get paid? And he is, and I'm not really sure. It's going to be interesting to see kind of how they manage the rotations with Zion Williamson back in. You know, they talked up that Zion wasn't really the savior of the franchise this offseason, that it was Drew Holiday's team, and we haven't really seen that come to fruition. But Brandon Ingram's kind of stepped into that role, so maybe they always planned for Zion not to be the focal point of the offense once he was out there on the court, you know, if he was healthy to start the year and it was going to be a guy like Drew Holiday. And maybe you just replace that with Brandon Ingram, and maybe that takes some of the pressure off of Zion when he first makes his return, knowing you've got a guy playing like Brandon Ingram is. I think that's kind of how they look at it. But, you know, he was playing and had a pretty decent usage in preseason, too. I don't think it was to the same degree that he has now. And if he really buys into this team, or maybe if the Pelicans kind of let him know he's going to be getting that max contract, and I fully expect that to be the case with this team and him, then maybe he's okay kind of taking a step back as they ease Zion Williamson back into it. But I don't think Zion's in line for heavy minutes once he returns. So maybe this is, you know, an issue that's going to present itself further down the line in the season, not right when Zion returns. But it's going to be interesting to see how that goes, because without Brandon Ingram playing right now and being that go-to scorer and having very efficient nights, you don't want to stop him from doing what he's doing, particularly if you're trying to win ball games. So I think it'll be kind of more the same with Zion being a complimentary piece when he returns.
It is going to be interesting to see how Zion works when he does return. All eyes are going to be on the Pelicans when that does happen. For now, they're just looking to get back onto the winners list, and Jake will have it all covered for us over on Locked On Pelicans. Jake, thanks for jumping on Locked On NBA with me.
Of course. Thanks for having me on, Josh.
It's the time of the year when everyone is traveling or running around getting thoughtful gifts for the people that they care about. Rather thinking about giving yourself the gift of an Audible membership, now is the best time to do it, with a special offer of 53% off your first 3 months. Access an unbeatable selection of audiobooks, including bestsellers, motivation books, mysteries, thrillers, whatever it is, Audible will have you covered. And right now, for a limited time, you can get 3 months off Audible for just $6.95 a month. That's more than half off the regular price. Give yourself the gift of listening. For more, go to audible.com/lockedonNBA. And you can get that 3 month deal for just $6.95 a month. That's more than half the regular price. Locked On NBA, audible.com/lockedonNBA, or you can text Locked On NBA to 500-500. Go and listen to, I know the book that my partner had, just finished reading, Testaments by Margaret Atwood. You can go and listen to that over on Audible. I highly suggest you go. But there's also the Audible originals they have as well. So plenty of different things, different titles to suit whatever your needs, whatever your wants, whatever your desires are in the audio book format. Go across to Audible, and that is audible.com/lockedonNBA. Now I'm joined by the host of the Locked On Jazz podcast. You hear him here on Locked On NBA as well. David Locke is here to talk about a Utah team that is failing to live up to preseason expectations. David, they currently sit at 13-10. Mike Conley's dealing with a hamstring issue. What's the major problem here with Utah? We haven't spoken since the season's begun, but things just haven't really clicked as we would have hoped.
Yeah, I think it's a depth issue as much as anything. The minute they've taken Conley, Bogdanovich, or Mitchell off the floor until the other night against Memphis, they've really struggled. Quite overwhelmingly, actually, if you kind of dig into the numbers a little bit, just once one of those three guys has left the floor, the offense without Conley's in the 10th percentile, the offense without Donovan or Bojan, this was before the Memphis game, is in the 2nd percentile. So they've actually, even in some of these blowouts, they've been even or so, and then they go to the bench, and they have not been able to regain after that. And then I would say just, you know, obviously the Mike Conley addition has not found a rhythm yet, and probably a bigger change on Mike than people realized when the season started.
Yeah, how much of it do you think is, you know, a lot has been made of it with the Jazz and their seemingly over-reliance on taking floaters, and Conley's been one of the large exponents of that, Mitchell in part of that too, but also the difference in playing with a center like Marc Gasol versus playing with a center like Rudy Gobert, the differences in terms of their ability to get up and catch lobs and just the way that those two play. How much of that has been, you know, Conley taking shots that aren't necessarily great, but also just adjusting to that different type of center that he's playing with?
So I think there's a convergence of a lot of things that are taking place here. One is that most of the league has changed the way they're defending, so everyone drops a big now right on top of the rim. And so Rudy Gobert is rolling right into that drop big, which is driving the guards, Donovan and Mike, right into the same big. And then that's why you're getting so much of those floaters. And they both have got to change the way they're dealing with that, because they're taking way too many. The other aspect is what you're talking about, which is the difference between Rudy Gobert and Marc Gasol. If you think about Marc Gasol, Gasol was either half rolling or popping, leaving a wide open lane for Mike Conley when he was driving. And so if Gasol's popping back out, Mike's going to the basket and getting to the rim with the big guy pulling back out to deal with Gasol, or Gasol on a half roll. And so this is just a different game. It's much more crowded for Mike, and I think he's struggled because of that. And then I also think Mike is such an interesting guy and such a guy who wants to do well and new circumstance after 788 games in the same place, that the early struggles, I think, have built on themselves for him. I think they're, you know, I think he was, I think he got bothered and a little undone by them, be in the sense that he wanted to please so much.
He's taking only 19% of his shots at the rim this season, which seems low, and he's in the 88th percentile in terms of that floater range. Is there just a chance that Conley, at his age, and he's not young, he's 32, 33 years of age, that he just doesn't have that sort of pop to get to the rim anymore, so he's settling for more of these inefficient shots?
His rim numbers, if you look at over the last 4 years, the fade of his rim shooting, it's a little disconcerting if you're a Jazz fan. I think it's an adjustment right now, but I think there's also, you know, 32-year-old guards don't go to the rim quite as much the way the league's adjusted. He's also, you know, he's 6'1", so that's hard. But if you look at what you're alluding to, is if you go back to when he was 27 years old in 14-15, he went to the, took 28% of his shots at the rim. Then I think it went to 26. Then it went to 20. Then he spiked it back up to 20. Then he didn't act. No, that's the year he hardly played. Then he went to 19, and then he went. Now he's at 13. Now 19 to 13 is a really dramatic drop. If that's where he is, then this is the beginning of the end for him, and it's happening fast. But even just the 28% to the 19% over the 4 years prior was a considerable drop of shots at the rim.
Yeah, it is. It's a huge change in his shot profile, and those shots obviously aren't going in, and it does speak to, yeah, that concern with size and with age. And it's a little bit of a worry at this point, but I guess you can deal with a guy struggling to fit in like Conley at times, but when other players aren't necessarily at their best, someone like Joe Ingles, who's been a key part of this Jazz team, his move to the bench, I'd say, hasn't gone as Utah would have hoped. He has had his issues with his shot. I'd say he's looked a little bit better back in the starting lineup with Conley out, but how can the Jazz, you know, move that, yeah, Ingles, I guess, increased confidence back in that lineup as when he has to move back to the bench when Conley returns? How can they benefit from this, I guess, spike in his production?
Well, one of the problems is the Jazz have had really inconsistent play in the backup point guard position from Emmanuel, yes, Mudiay and Dante Exumor. Maybe at times it's been consistent, just not consistently good. And so when Joe Ingles plays with the ball in his hands, Joe Ingles can't pass to Joe Ingles to be an open catch and shoot shooter. And so, you know, as good as Joe is at his length and size with the ball in his hands, it also means he doesn't get the same look that he would get otherwise. So I think that's a tricky thing. He's got a weird statistical abnormality going with the corner three right now. This is a shot that he's kind of made his name on. The Australian, and you would appreciate that we call the right corner Happy Valley, because that's where he grew up in Happy Valley, Australia. And he owns that corner. He's been over 50% from his career from there. This year he is shooting 7% on corner threes.
Yeah. Okay.
I think about whatever that comes out to, probably 2 of 18. That's not going to last. His last few years were 49, 42, 53, and 44. So there's going to be a corner three surge. Now, the bigger issue is that he used to be taking many more corner threes. But again, he can't pass to himself in the corner if he's the one running the pick and roll.
So with that issue, with him having to shoulder such a large responsibility in that second unit, is there any thought, do you think, of changing that starting lineup, of, yeah, maybe moving Royce O'Neal back to the bench, Bojan Bogdanovic, even though he's been excellent, or more staggering to get Ingles into more of those shooting type situations rather than having to be the entire offense in that second unit?
They're going to have to, you know, Joe just, I'm not sure that you can adjust your entire team just to get Joe Ingles going, right? Like, I think Royce O'Neal's been really good. I think Joe just needs to get going. Like, and I think that, you know, he's got to do it either with the ball in his hands or when he's playing with the other guys, make those shots. But, you know, it's not as though he's getting no shots, and he hasn't been making them. He's shooting, I think his three-point shooting is 31%. He's taking 1.5 less than he did a year ago. So it's less, but it's not like zero, right? So at some point, Joe just needs to get going.
The last 7 games, the Jazz have won 2, and both of those have been against the Grizzlies, so that's obviously a little bit concerning. But I think, look, we always talk about the schedule with the Jazz every season, and their upcoming run is pretty, yeah, it's a pretty good opportunity for them to get on a roll. The Thunder, the Wolves, the Warriors, the Magic, the Hawks, the Hornets, like that is 6 games which should all be considered, yeah, winnable, and that could really change the narrative around this team. Do you think that it is just, yeah, some of that is, you know, taking on the Raptors and Sixers and Lakers in a 3-game stretch that made them look bad, and then this will, you know, maybe change the perception? Or is it a little bit different to some of those struggles we've seen in the past?
I do think this next stretch is going to be interesting. They play Oklahoma City on Monday, today, as everyone's listening. I don't know if they beat Oklahoma City. They play Minnesota on Wednesday. I don't know if they beat Minnesota. And I think those will be really telling performances. If they can pull, I think Oklahoma City's pretty good, actually. I think they're far better than their record. And I think they're probably the 8th best team in the West. If they don't make a change, I think they'll make the playoffs. So I don't know that the Jazz can win that game. They're playing in Portland on Sunday, and so they'll be a little tired. But if the Jazz do win that game and they do beat Minnesota and they do kind of take advantage of this run, then what I think you find out is that they are a tier below the Lakers and a tier below maybe some of the top teams in the Eastern Conference after that road trip. That road trip was a little funky in this sense. I'm not making an excuse, but they played Milwaukee without Gobert, and Giannis had 50. They then got waxed by Indiana, who, for whatever reason, totally has their numbers, beat them by 70 points the last three games they've played them. Then on the back end of the road trip, they played back-to-back games against Toronto and Philadelphia, neither who had won or lost at home. They got wiped out in both of them, and the margin by which they're losing those games is disconcerting, but that gets to the whole bench issue. And then the Lakers are great. Yeah. The Lakers are way better than the Jazz. I did not realize how great the Lakers are. I was looking at something today, Josh, and it wasn't until we played them the other night that I understood what's going on with Lakers. What's going on with the Lakers is that they start the night every night, and then they sub out LeBron James. And he comes back and plays second-unit players to open the second quarter, and then they sub him out, and Anthony Davis plays second-unit players. Like, the Jazz lost the game against the Lakers when Anthony Davis was being guarded by Ed Davis.
Yeah.
But you can usually avoid – no, you can avoid that, except for they have LeBron. So you can't avoid that. It's crazy what they are able to do with those two. Anthony Davis, I think, is usually playing the entire first 12 minutes. And if you go look at Laker games, at the end of the first quarter, they're going on 8-0, 7-0 runs almost every night. And then the other night against Portland, they go on a 15-0 run because LeBron James is on the floor being guarded by Anthony Simons and Kent Bazemore and Anthony Tolliver. Like, that should be illegal.
Yeah, it is a problem for the league. The Lakers are obviously crushing at the moment, 20-3. The Jazz have some work to do. David, we'll catch all of your thoughts over on Locked On Jazz and, of course, here during the week on Locked On NBA as well. Thank you for jumping on with me and talking Jazz.
Do you know how hard that was to say nice thing about the Lakers?
I imagine it pained you, but you got it out, and it's good to be. Now let's bring in one of the hosts of the Locked On Knicks podcast. Gavin Shaul is here to talk to me about what happened in New York over the last couple of days with their head coach, David Fizdale, being the first coaching casualty in the NBA this season. The writing was obviously on the wall, but in true Knicks fashion, Gavin, they still managed to make it weird by having Fizdale conduct a practice and then firing him straight after that. Can they ever do anything right?
Yeah, Josh, I would have been more surprised if it went down in anything resembling a conventional manner. And I think it only further highlights that the Knicks' flaws, as is always true, go far beyond just a coach. And granted, the coach was an issue. I don't think David Fizdale was doing much with this roster. And simultaneously, he didn't have much of a roster to succeed with. Both can simultaneously be true. And I think in this case, they were. But it's suggestive of the fact that maybe someone like Steve Mills, who's somehow hung around for a decade and gotten off the hook, probably needs to be gone as well.
Yeah, how is Mills still here through all of the Phil Jackson nonsense, now whatever's happening here? Like, why is he still around? I guess we could cast the same eye over towards what's happening in Chicago, but it seems like it's on another level here in New York. Like, Mills seems to skate by unscathed. Is he just have the ear of James Dolan and just keeps telling him, well, it's not my fault, look at what these guys are doing?
I've been peddling a theory that he saw Dolan kill someone. Like, just maybe it was during a concert and he got angry and he just bashed someone over the head with his guitar. And Mills was the only other guy in the room. And he said, you know what? You have a job for life, man. I don't know. I mean, I think Mills he knows how to play the game. I think he's a horrible manager of basketball, or an NBA team in particular. I think he's a brilliant politician. He's a guy clearly knows his fault. He knows exactly when to fire a coach. He knows exactly how to never take just enough power that things can be pinned on him. And even how things currently stand, I mean, he could just pin it on the other side of the Knicks front office and say, look, it's him. I've just been doing the money stuff. I haven't made a basketball decision since I gave $100 million to Tim Hardaway for no apparent reason. So I would hope that he's gone at the end of the season. It seems like things are trending that way. I wouldn't say it's a guarantee because he's clearly a survivor, and you got to give him credit for that as much as I'm frustrated as a longtime Knicks supporter.
Yeah, I think that's the concern here. We know that Mike Miller's been promoted to interim head coach, but the fact that we heard from weeks ago that Mills was going to Dolan to lay the groundwork for Fizdale's firing, hey, this roster's actually good, he's just doing not a great job, makes you think that the guy that he's promoted then to be his successor also is going to have that idea of this roster's good, and you know, you've got to be still pushing and pushing and pushing, and don't worry about development, and yeah, having 35 Julius Randle and Marcus Morris ISOs per game to try and get a victory, even though that's not clearly winning basketball. But it just does fear that there's more sort of Mills direction in this new head coach. But what do we know about Mike Miller? We know he's from the Spurs system, but will he be able to have any sort of influence on changing this, or is that direction just going to still come down from the front office saying, no, we can win and we're still going to keep pushing towards it?
You know, I'm pretty bullish on him, and I mean, clearly not in terms of wins and losses, because as you pretty much, I mean, highlighted there, this isn't a team that's built to win and isn't one that should win, because it's a woefully misconstructed roster. That being said, Mike Miller has a really good track record of player development. As the head coach of the Westchester Knicks, he led the entire G League in call-ups over his three seasons there. He developed guys like Damian Dotson, who looked a lot more confident in his first game under Miller, Luke Kornet, who had a really good season for the Knicks last year for his role, and he pretty much revived Trey Burke's NBA career, for better or worse. There's some people who might regret that. But I think he's a strong coach. I mean, the Westchester Knicks, when he were there, they were effective offensively. They were top five in the G League defensively. And the point is, he's really focused on, again, improving young talent and allowing young talent to thrive. Like, he's the type of guy who before games in the G League would individually work out with his key players. And I think that emphasis is exactly what the Knicks need, because ultimately, I mean, from the get-go, that's what the season should have been about for the Knicks. It should have been about emphasizing those young guys and RJ Barrett and Mitchell Robinson and Frank Ntilikina. And the more those guys play a significant role, I mean, the better the season is going to go for the Knicks. And the way they looked last night was a great first step in that direction. Rotations were a lot more consistent. They seemed less haphazard, both in terms of the players he was playing and actually, like, on the court defensive rotations, because they were just coming off a game against the Nuggets that ultimately got Fizdale fired, where Denver, I think, shot maybe 30 open threes, and that's not an exaggeration, like wide open threes, because the Knicks' defensive strategy essentially boiled down to we're going to double team anyone who gets the ball under the basket, no matter what position they're in or who it is. And with Miller, there was an immediate shift in that strategy, and everything just looked a lot more coherent. Granted, there's inherently always going to be a bump when you have a new coach and you have a fresh voice in there, so we're going to see how sustainable those things are, but they looked a lot better under Miller in his first game, and I think he's ultimately a better coach than Fizdale and a better fit for this team.
Let me be a devil's advocate there, because I do agree that he is an interesting development type coach, but the concerns I still have is the influence of what Mills does, and we know the love that front office has for someone like Alfred Payton, and the fact that he came in his, you know, I think first game back from his hamstring issue and already played more minutes than Dennis Smith, a guy who they really should be looking to get developmental minutes in, is a little bit concerning. So that would then, you know, are we just going to see Payton come in and start taking the starting job and really limit Ntilikina and Smith down to bit part, you know, 10th, 11th men in the rotation? That's the fear, that we're getting that direction pushed through from front office. Do you think there is that sort of input that they have? Because I don't see any other reason why you'd prioritize someone like Payton in this situation.
I would say those are two separate conversations. If Payton starts playing over Ntilikina, that would be a pretty significant concern for me, because, I mean, in terms of real plus minus, and basically, I mean, not even analytic, like any number you look at, Ntilikina in a lot of ways has been the Knicks' best player this season. So that would be pretty significant if Payton started inexplicably playing over him. That being said, I don't necessarily mind Payton playing over DSJ. Like, at least in my mind, DSJ is something of a lost cause. Now, I mean, you could argue the prudent thing to do, given the fact that the Knicks aren't going to make the playoffs, obviously, and should honestly be trying to lose as many games as possible, would be to play DSJ anyways, try and pump up his trade value and see if there's anything there, because obviously the guy's an incredible athlete, and that's why teams keep wanting to take chances on him. That being said, he's been nothing short of a disaster this year, and I think in terms of the development of the other guys on the Knicks roster, Payton might be more conducive to that happening, in that he can actually get them the ball in the right spots and he doesn't just hijack possessions to chuck mid-range contested jumpers. So that would be the argument for Payton. So I don't really hate Payton playing over DSJ. I certainly get the argument to the contrary, and I could definitely see why someone would be concerned about that, and it's something to watch for sure. But I'm only really going to be concerned when Payton is taking Ntilikina's minutes in a meaningful way over a significant number of games.
Well, let's see what happens over the next few weeks and months with Mike Miller in this role, and see if he can turn around not wins and losses, because again, Knicks fans shouldn't be caring about that at this point. It's about competitiveness and development, and let's see which direction this team goes. The problems are way more than the head coach, and we'll see if he can fight through those issues. Of course, Gavin, you'll have it all covered for us over on Locked On Knicks as the season continues. So thanks for jumping on Locked On NBA with me.
Yeah, happy to do it, Josh.
And that will do it for today's Locked On NBA. Don't forget to subscribe Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, and on Spotify, and give us a 5-star rating and review. And check out our sponsor, audible.com/LockedOnNBA. Guys, we are done here. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya.